For the past 3 weeks, the world has been transfixed as many Hong Kong residents have taken to the streets of that city under the name Occupy Central in the largest pro-democracy protests since the events of Tiananmen Square 25 years ago. While the protests began with just a handful of students boycotting their classes, their ranks have swelled to sometimes hundreds of thousands, and the protesters' ubiquitous umbrellas have become not just a tool to ward off tear gas and pepper spray, but a powerful symbol of the movement. For all the action on the streets, though, the so-called umbrella movement has been equally active online, on platforms like Twitter and Instagram. In this podcast, I'm talking with Crystal Avedon, a social media researcher at the University of Western Australia, who followed the Occupy Central hashtag on Instagram for 72 hours in the first week of the Hong Kong protests, which revealed some fascinating insights into how people there are using these platforms. Hi, Crystal. How are you?
Hey, Patrick. Thanks for having me. Doing well.
Great. I'm so glad to have you here. What we're talking about this week is something that's been in the news for the past couple of weeks. It's on international media's radar, and there's a lot to be said about it. But I really want to ask you about what you've been following based on a blog post that you recently put up at your personal blog, where you decided to track the Occupy Central tag, which is a very popular hashtag, specifically on Instagram over about a three-day period. And you tried to, what you call, thematize the visual emblems of social protest, this particular social protest, as it was mediated here on this on social media, on the Instagram platform. And just basically, I'm really curious to know what you saw.
Sure. So I should probably start with the mini confession that I wasn't aware of this movement from the very start. And you can see the post was put up on 30th of September. So the 72 hours that I tracked was on 28th, 29th, and 30th of September. How it all began was on the 27th. I had a conversation with a friend in Hong Kong who was saying, oh, I've been up all night watching online streamed protests. And I was going, what? Protests, because nothing has been on my radar, and I track East Asian social media news quite actively. So in our conversation the next day, we realized it took me 24 hours before this news trended in my networks, and I was quite interested to see what the beginnings of these were, what people were saying in the early hours of when this was happening, and then began to realize that there were some tropes. So as you can see in some of the shots I put in the 25 posts, some of this included protest selfies, some of animals, some of creative art pieces, and I wanted to make sense of what people in Hong Kong who were experiencing this at the start were making of it.
That's fantastic. And you've got about 25 different categories that you sort of arbitrarily seem to have come up with here. I'm wondering if how you came up with those 25 categories. Was there an overarching theme that you were looking at? Did you just walk through it as you saw them?
I think as a practitioner of digital ethnography, I fall really strongly in grounded theory. So these 25 just simply emerged from the mess of pictures that I was tracking over 72 hours. So as long as they showed up more than once or they were consistent through the 3 days, I picked it up as one of the tropes that was identified.
So you came at it in a pretty systematic way, it sounds like.
I hope so.
Well, you're a scholar, so I guess we can expect that of you. Mm. So what were some of the categories that you found?
Right. So I think some of the more common ones that we also saw against all the other Occupy movements, so when people were borrowing emblems from pop culture. So there were quite a lot of pictures where people wearing the mask of Guy Fawkes. There were people also posting up lyrics from Les Miserables, like, do you hear the people sing? And then, of course, I think what was quite unique and humorous yet critical with this Occupy Central movement was some really subversive caricatures of political leaders. So this was the most interesting to me because it's quite unlike Western caricatures if you do not have understandings of, say, Chinese mythology, the understanding of Chinese words and homonyms, or some sort of cultural aesthetic where some words imply a certain personality or emotion or quality in a person. So I really like that the best.
I think it's really interesting also that there's a Confucian element to this, that The criticism of people who are high up on the hierarchy can be a very different kind of cultural thing, for lack of a better word there. It's very, it can be a very sensitive thing in many Confucian cultures in a way that it is not in Western cultures.
Yeah, definitely. But I think the success here is that it's fusing something really critical with a very humorous aspect. So it's easy for people to just brush it off as frivolous internet culture or meme culture or just digital humor. But if you're really situated there and you have the context, you would understand what each of those pictures stand for. So I think it's interestingly just bordering on this line where it's almost serious, but yet can easily jump into the pool of just being frivolous recreation if need be to safeguard.
I think that's really interesting because I did some research in Vietnam, as a lot of our listeners know, and I've looked at the way that Vietnamese people use humorous pop culture memes as a way of talking about s relatively sensitive social and political issues that they might not be able to get away with talking about
Definitely.
in an overt way, be not only because of legal prohibitions, but because of cultural prohibitions, where people would not really be willing to accept that kind of overt, straightforward discussion, critique, whether that is of public policy or anything else. But when it's put into a humorous context, particularly one that is connected closely to pop culture, it becomes much less offensive. It becomes m much more innocuous in a way that's very easy to share and get along with, and people seem not to have as much of a problem with it. So would you maybe walk us through a couple of your favorite examples in here? I know it's hard to do when we can't actually see the ones that we're looking at, but maybe you can find some that we can describe a little bit.
I think I was also tracking the hashtag mutation of the Ferguson riots and the St. Louis hashtag. So a couple of those. And they're pretty old by now because, hashtags expire really quickly when they're not a buzz of activity. So if you go into those tags right now, you're going to see lots of spam, lots of irrelevant activity. And surely this also happened with the Occupy Central tag. But what was especially interesting to me or distinctive to this was even in the very early hours, there were very clearly tourists posing in the thick of events. So if you're on the blog, I list this as number 21. And in fact, I think one of the first five selfies that came out of Occupy Central in the first hour that I was tracking it was of a tourist who was looking rather gleeful, and his hashtag, his caption was just protest selfie with multiple exclamation marks. Yeah, and I think probably because of the ethnic makeup of people in Hong Kong, we can kind of identify more Anglo-Saxon looking people as tourists. But more so, you can see even in a lot of their captions that they're in the thick of events, that they went down just to see what was happening, that they were trying to fit in. And these tourist selfies or tourists posting pictures of themselves in front of barricades, armed up in gear and masks, that was quite grabbing for me because I don't think I've seen that in the last few hashtags of activism that I've tracked.
That reminds me a little bit, maybe more than a little bit, of a lot of the kind of selfies that we saw in Thailand right after the military coup in May, where you had lots of, local Thai people taking selfies with the military, the members of the military who were out there, in front of their Humvees, in front of, barricades, in a very sort of light-hearted way. And it was all very, hey, look at me, I'm here with a, member of the Thai military. I know you only watched this for 3 days, but did you happen to see an evolution in terms of that kind of?
I think I archived the feed for 3 days, but I did follow it through the week. So I think in the early hours, it was tourists displaying themselves this way. Not to say that there weren't any locals doing it, there certainly were, but just in terms of what pictures were trending or were coming up in the masses, you could clearly see it was tourists doing it. And then slowly as the movement grew bigger and more people started walking in, going to the city center, leaving spaces of the office or the school to get in the center of this hype, then you see a lot of pictures of people just wanting to mark their presence, as if to say, I've been here, I've been in the thick of events, This has been a revolutionary point. I don't want to miss it. It's once in a lifetime. And all these captions are coming up from locals themselves. Some even admitted they probably weren't really aware of what was going on, but they wanted to go down to experience the atmosphere just to lend support. So I think it was shifting from some sort of touristic spectacle or exoticism into more of hype culture. But then through this hype culture and extreme exposure, I'm pretty sure more and more people started to understand the organic origins of the movement.
That's a really interesting point. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. So a couple of these people whom I've spotted on the Occupy Central hashtags would be what I term micro-celebrities on the internet. Mm-hmm. So they're probably Instagram celebrities who've got nicely, tastefully, aesthetically curated profiles with quite a strong following, maybe between 5,000 followers to 20,000 followers. So these people, you can see the types of photos they put up, some of them in the fashionista genre that I also list on the blog, are more clean, are more appealing, but also wanting to lend support in some way without disrupting the aesthetic of the feed that they've curated. And I think a couple of the pet selfies, so these are very cute pets on Instagram, bearing the yellow ribbon that was an emblem of the movement. Several of these pets were celebrity pets on Instagram, so like a celebrity cat or a celebrity puppy. And when their owners choose to circulate this picture on their stream, it's spreading awareness of this situation across this global network of people who just say follow pets of Instagram. So I think those were very innovative ways of getting the word out, even if people were not really conscious that they were doing it in the beginning.
As you mentioned a few minutes ago, a lot of Instagram users were sort of jumping onto the Occupy hashtag for things that had absolutely nothing to do with Occupy.
I think it was, as most things go in meme culture, when something's in its hype cycle, at the peak of its hype cycle, people are fighting to command attention. So in the very first few hours, it was just irrelevant people probably trending the hashtag or posting hashtags to very inane things. But slowly, I think when it got to the end of the first week, you could see internet web stores and blog shops and just people advertising a whole host of random things on the hashtag because they know they're going to get viewership and click-throughs.
Yeah. Crystal, let's talk for just a minute about the single iconic image, I guess it is. Maybe it's the symbol that's come to be known and associated most with this protest, which is the umbrella. Mm. In what sort of ways did you see that playing a role in any of these images and emblems that you saw?
Right. I'm pretty sure that was not the first visual emblem that captured this scene organically. Organically meaning people in Hong Kong coming up with it themselves, not some sort of imagery imposed by the media. In fact, I'm quite sure in the first 10 hours or so when this really escalated, students in Hong Kong were posting throwback selfies. So as pictures of them in elementary school or in high school with a passport size photo of them in uniform. And the semblance was along the lines of back when I was a student, things were going well and I missed that. And as a student today, I want to activate this agency I have when I'm older and to push for clearer, fairer, stronger lines for elections. So those were the first emblems that came up. Followed by the protest selfies, but that's not distinctively of Hong Kong. But I think what really propelled this imagery of the umbrella was when a guy was spotted holding two black umbrellas in mid-hop in the middle of fog. And somehow this picture was taken from many angles. He was walking around white fog with two distinct umbrellas. It was captured and juxtaposed against a picture of a lady in Ferguson. Also another iconic image when she was just jumping in mid-air with two hands raised up, face covered with protective masks. So people were comparing this person to the lady in Ferguson, and he quickly trended as an iconic image. So that was first when people were trying to shield themselves in tear gas, not yet with the rubber bullets. And then we've got this really, really beautiful creative artwork of people using yellow backgrounds, trying to paint some sort of iconic image of Hong Kong. And then umbrellas came into this cultural emblem. It became a symbol for this. I think the yellow ribbon came up shortly after that, but it didn't quite stick as well as the umbrella, especially when the Chinese wordplay. You can kind of modify the shape of an umbrella or the Mandarin word for umbrella to signify this in an art piece.
Would you say that the umbrella really became the focal point as a symbol, as a semiotic representation of this whole protest after the evening of the 29th when the local police began using tear gas?
Yeah, definitely. Because before that, people were trying out, well, not really fair to say trying out. People were experimenting and engaging with different types of, not really memes, but visual emblems or tropes, such as having both their hands raised up, similar to Ferguson, or holding up cell phones with a backlight, or hugging, or holding up posters. So all that was more prevalent than the symbol of the umbrella. I think the umbrella really took over when mainstream media captured those, and then when Western media decided to just brand this the umbrella movement or the umbrella revolution, then it was solidified as the main centric trope.
That's an interesting point, how you mentioned that Western media seemed to brand it as the Umbrella Movement and the Umbrella Revolution. Two interesting points there. One is the idea that this was done by Western media, not necessarily by locals on the ground. And another point is that one that Jason Lee of the Civic Beat wrote about last week on his blog, when he was saying that the use of the phrase, the hashtag Umbrella Revolution, has probably done more to harm this movement than it has to help it because of the connotations that the word revolution has in mainland China with the central government.
Yeah, I agree. I actually really enjoyed that post, and I've been using it as an example with my communication students here. I think it's difficult really for there to be cross-cultural mapping when you're trying to make sense of a situation. And when you have something so similar, like the most recent Ferguson riots, to compare this against, it's easy for us to just pigeonhole this as the East Asian version of something we once experienced. So a lot of the richness, a lot of the organic origins of this, I think, was just slowly fading out or being diluted as this movement was being described by outsiders.
Crystal, the movement, the protests in Hong Kong are maybe losing a little bit of steam. As you and I are talking, they're still very much going, but there's a lot of discussion over how long they're going to continue, and what the eventual outcome is going to be. How do you feel? What role do you think that the social media here, and particularly these kind of emblems that you're documenting, are going to play in the eventual outcome?
At the risk of sounding too simplistic, I think it's quite the usual cycle of a social media protest. It's quite the same lifespan when their initial beginnings are organically capturing this, mostly for people to contact each other and to rally support. And then it jumps to the peak where it starts trending and people who may not really be invested or understand this start to pouring in large numbers. Great, because you capture the attention of people and power of media who can give more exposure to this or maybe add pressure to some sort of authority figures to take action. But then it slowly becomes old news when people keep trending the same things over and over. The bulk of the people who jump on the bandwagon just for this, just because they were interested in the trend or the fame or the hype cycle, move away from this. And you're left with the core people again who started this movement, but now with some sort of reputation or cover that this is an expired movement, or that this has outlived its life cycle, or that maybe something has been solved just because the people are beginning to clear the streets. So I do feel some sense of compassion or sympathy for the people who were really invested in the movement from the beginnings, and how the hype cycle, as mediated by social media, may have done them, or not done them harm, but may have impeded their progress a little.
Thank you so much, Crystal.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, where can we follow you and what you're doing?
All right, I think probably the most legitimate source would be my blog, which is wishchris.com. So that's WISHCRYS.com.
And of course, I hope you'll follow me as I track the impact of the digital revolution across Asia from China to Indonesia to India and everywhere in between. You can do that at facebook.com/AsiaDigitalLife. If you're a Google Plus user, just dial up google.com/+AsiaDigitalLife. I'm also tweeting about all of this and more on Twitter at psharbaugh. That's psharbaugh. For now, the best place to listen to these podcasts is via my SoundCloud stream at, yep, soundcloud.com/AsiaDigitalLife. Thanks again, Crystal. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And keep it tuned. We'll be back soon.